Warning, 30 Screams or Less may contain spoilers about movies that have recently been released. If you haven't seen the movie, go watch it, come back, and enjoy the show. Or, if you don't want to waste your time watching the movie and rather have two random horror dudes watch it for you, we got you covered as well. Welcome everyone to 30 Screams or Less, a horror movie podcast where we review horror movies in 30 minutes or less. Today's movie we're going to be talking about is Peter Pan's Neverland Nightmare. It's directed by Scott Chambers, written by J.M. Barrie and Scott Chambers, starring Megan Placido as Wendy, Martin Portlock as Peter Pan, Kit Green as Tinkerbell, and Peter D'Souza Fayhoney as Michael. The plot of the movie is Wendy Darling embarks on a mission to rescue her brother Michael from the sinister Peter Pan. During her journey, she encounters Tinkerbell, who tragically mistakes heroin for pixie dust. But before we get into it, Corey, last night I was looking in the mirror, and you know what? My beard was looking gnarly. And I said to myself, I can't look like this. I gotta do something. So I decided to break out Beard Octane's beard wash and conditioner along with their beard oil, and dude, my beard looked amazing. I'm glad you turned me on to Beard Octane.
Yeah, of course. Like I said, I've been using their products for years and I can vouch for them. And whether you're pounding IPAs or chopping wood, you gotta look your best. Visit beardoctane.com and use the code 30screams10 at checkout for a 10% discount. It helps us. And like I said, the products are absolutely incredible. They're local too. They're based out of Connecticut. So help them out and support small businesses. We're not just slinging beard grooming supplies. We've been using them for a while.
Yeah, we have. 30 Screams or Less starts now. Corey, what did you think of Peter Pan's Neverland Nightmare?
Dude, Scott Chambers is a genius in this genre. Mm. From Blood and Honey to Peter Pan and soon Bambi and Pinocchio, because he's creating this whole Pooniverse thing, there is no stopping him. He's telling a story about characters that we all grew up on, but putting them into a genre that we love and that this podcast is all about. Indie horror is alive and well, and I honestly think that this film proves it, because I'm pretty sure it did well in the box office as well, and it was only there for like 2 days.
Yeah, he's absolutely killing it in this genre. Indie horror is very much alive and well and is really starting to, I think, make this like resurgence, if you will, because of movies like Terrifier and then, you know, Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey, and Blood and Honey 2, which progressively started making more money at the box office. Opening this opportunity to have movies like this, like Peter Pan or Bambi down the line, things like that. So indie horror is starting to make a real big comeback. That, at least that's what I think.
I agree. And the fact that to me, this Peter Pan film didn't seem like an indie movie. It kind of seemed like a big budget horror movie.
I was thinking the same thing. In my notes, I even said this movie looks like a kind of bigger budget movie. This movie blew me away. Not only because it's like when you're watching it, it doesn't feel like some sort of indie horror movie that doesn't have that kind of cinematography or budget behind it.
Yeah.
Like you're saying.
Even the performances from the cast, man, those like all A-list celebrity performances from every single person in this movie, even the kids.
Yeah, they were all great. Martin Portlock, unreal. Absolutely unreal.
Yep.
If there was anything about this movie you found bad, Martin Portlock elevated the movie that much more. Because I'm watching this guy as Peter Pan, and I'm like, shit, he could be an actual Joker in a Batman
series. So I noticed that, too, is he maybe took inspiration from Heath Ledger's version of that character, and I also caught a little bit of Eric Draven out of him.
Oh, good call.
Obviously The Crow,
yeah,
but he sounded a little bit like Brandon Lee at times.
Yeah, it's Brandon Lee reincarnate. I doubt it. He's probably like the same exact age.
So if we ever do get a Crow reboot that's not trash, maybe Martin Cove can play him.
Yeah, maybe. That would be fucking amazing. The Crow that came out was not all that great. Obviously, we both watched it and it was just like, I don't know, fart in church.
Yep. Which sucks because like, Bill Skarsgård was in it and he's great.
Yeah, he's awesome. There's a lot of stuff that he's in that I love, and that was not one of them. Obviously, we all love Barbarian. Barbarian is a fucking masterpiece. Boy Kills World. I loved it. That thing was crazy, that movie.
Yep.
But obviously, the It movies, both of them are pretty great. And, you know, he's obviously like an in-demand actor at the moment. So when The Crow came out, not really a fan. I also didn't want that movie remade anyways. It's a fucking perfect movie.
Mm-hmm.
Everything about it is absolutely perfect. The cinematography, the action, the performance, the aesthetic, the story behind it is obviously great, but also the real life story that he died in the middle of this movie. So it's like life imitates art. So everything about the movie was perfect. It didn't need to be remade the slightest bit, but here we are. But yeah, I can see what you're saying is that he had some of those inspirations to him. So definitely had Heath Ledger, definitely had some Brandon Lee-esque style to him. And I thought it was really cool, man. He was amazing in this movie.
So it's funny, we were talking about, you brought up It.
Yeah.
Because I also, there's a scene that's very, very early in the beginning of this movie where we kind of see Peter Pan for the first time. And it's when he's looking up through that floor, like trap door on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
Pennywise and Georgie right there.
Oh, absolutely. And man, this scene was nuts. Absolutely nuts. Because I'm thinking like, oh, he's going to snatch this kid. But the kid was kind of a little street smart, knowing like, I'm not supposed to talk to strangers. Also, it's fucking weird that this guy is just creeping up through my floorboard. So maybe I should go get my mom. And he's like, no, you don't need to get her. You know, and he keeps trying to go get mom. And that's when the mom finally walks in and all hell breaks loose.
Yep. Little kid got his mom killed.
Oh, yeah. Not just killed.
This part was fucking gross.
It was disgusting. Oh, my God. The scalping was brutal.
He grabbed like a paring knife out of the kitchen drawer and scalped her with it.
Yep.
Well, first he beat her with a meat tenderizing hammer.
Yeah. Oh, she got real messed up. But she got her licks in, and that's how his face got all fucked up looking, was because of her. You know, she started carving at him with a knife. And he didn't look like that before. Half his face was basically cut off.
Oh, yeah. She got him like, only like, think of a Joker smile, but only one side of it.
Yeah, it's exactly it. So he did have that Joker look to him. So he fucking destroyed her, man. And I was trying to figure out what his deal was, because obviously he's kidnapping kids, but I wasn't sure how he goes about it or like what he does with them. We find out later on what he does with them. And I don't think he takes them to Neverland. I think Neverland is a place in his head. And that,
oh, absolutely. Though I think there was that one scene towards the end of the movie when he like levitated.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, what is going on?
Yeah.
This is supposed to be like real life, you know?
Right. Well, Peter Pan flies. You know that.
Yeah, true. But they didn't address it at all other than that one scene.
Yeah, I think that's all in his head. That's what I think. I think that he's floating and it's all in his head. And Tinkerbell is just someone he lives with that is just like in this bad situation with him and is basically a hostage. And I think he's just honestly a serial killer who will do all this shit and thinking that he's Peter Pan and that he's here to take the children to Neverland. Like he sees shit. Like he'll see the shadow of Peter Pan flying around.
Oh my God. I love that. That was so cool. It was like straight out of the cartoon.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Speaking of cartoon, I love the intro.
Oh, the storybook thing?
Yeah, the storybook type intro.
So I completely forgot that Scott Chambers directed this film until the credits rolled at the end. Like I knew it was part of the Pooniverse, the Winnie the Pooh universe. And I'm like, well, this makes a ton of sense that the beginning is the same way that the two Winnie the Pooh movies start. It was a storybook and someone narrating the pages. But then at the end, when I saw Scott Chambers did it, I'm like, oh, all makes sense now.
Mm-hmm. I don't know why there was a disconnect when I started watching it. I wasn't even thinking it was part of that universe. I don't know why, but I'm watching it and I'm like, oh, this kind of reminds me of Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey 2. Duh. Of course.
And you really got it later on when you saw the little kid wearing the shirt.
Yeah. I'm like, oh, I get it. Makes sense. And man, did kids really get it in this movie? Holy shit. Holy shit.
Including a whole ass bus full of them at one point.
Yes. So here's my confusion. And I'm thinking that maybe I need to go back and watch it. Because at the beginning, they say that kids are brought to Neverland because they're selected, right? So it's like they're special. They need to go to Neverland where they'll be kids forever. And they're selected for some sort of reason or another. In that case, that makes sense. But he started just slaughtering all these kids. And now I'm thinking, is he just nuts? Or is he having to do this shit and, like, he's taking their souls to Neverland? And, like, you would think if he just needs to bring up shit ton of kids to Neverland, he's got a whole buffet of kids in front of him. Right. He's like, oh, there's a whole bus of children that I can just take with me to Neverland. And then there must have been, like, 20 dead kids in the forest. So, Michael.
Actually, I rewound that scene. I was like, no way. They just, like you said, there's, like, 20 dead kids.
Yep.
The dead kid meter is way off the charts for that movie.
I'm like, Corey's sweating right now. He's getting all hot and bothered. So I was trying to figure out what makes him just keep the kids and, like, have them at the house and then bring them to Neverland, or versus the kids that he's just straight up killing on the fly. What's the difference? Don't know. Like, I don't think that was fully explained.
We're saving that for the sequel.
Oh, this movie's wide open for a sequel.
Wide open for a sequel, and eventually it's all the universes are going to cross. They're going to go full Avengers, probably, and different characters are going to appear in different movies and all that stuff.
Oh my God, this is going to be so absurd.
Yeah, so, like, when they first announced this whole universe, remember when we interviewed Louis Santer, and he told us that Scott Chambers was going to be announcing something within the next couple of weeks, and it was going to be, like, mind-blowing?
Yeah, the Pooniverse.
And it ended up being the Pooniverse. My mouth hit the floor the second they made that announcement.
Yep, we knew. We already knew. We got the heads up, at least, so we didn't know specifically that it was going to be a Pooniverse.
No, but no, he just told us that there was something that was going to get announced, and we were both going to love it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, and that we did. I mean, you and I liked both the Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey 1 and 2. We loved both of those.
Yeah.
So clearly those did well enough for him to be able to make this universe happen. So this Peter Pan, I think this is, like, the first outing in the universe, right?
What do you mean?
Well, first of, like, the whole Pooniverse. I mean, obviously we have Blood and Honey 2.
You're right, because he didn't announce the Pooniverse until Blood and Honey 2 came out.
Right. So this is the first movie outside of Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey to form that Pooniverse.
Yeah, and I think the next one is Bambi.
Which makes sense. So I will say this, hell of a start to kick off the Pooniverse. If we're not factoring in the Blood and Honey movies, this is a hell of a start to just start getting the ball rolling to release all the other movies into that Pooniverse.
Yeah. I don't think this has bad ratings on Rotten Tomatoes. And like I said, it had, like, a huge opening weekend. I remember reading people were very pleasantly surprised with it.
Yeah, I could see that. I was pleasantly surprised with it. I was expecting something pretty fucking goofy, to be honest.
Well, yeah, because obviously you got to think of the universe. Like, it's Peter Pan, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
We're used to these characters in you know, family movies, cartoons.
Mm-hmm.
So this has a 45% tomato meter,
yep,
and a 71% popcorn meter.
Which is actually pretty good for, like, that's fan score.
Yeah.
That's people that are watching the movie, and that's clearly good news. Tomato meter, obviously, that's just critics, which really are just people that apply to be a critic on Rotten Tomatoes. I mean, shit, we could sign up for it, but hey, I'd rather people listen to our podcast instead of reading our shit on that website. But who knows? Could be a good way to get some exposure for the podcast, or people could just let their friends know.
Yeah, our one listener, tell your friend.
Yeah, tell your friend.
Your one friend.
Exactly. And then tell your friend will tell their friends, and then that's how it happens. And then one day we're doing live podcasts at House of Blues or some shit.
Yep, we're selling out the House of Blues.
I have delusions of grandeur.
Mm, it's nice to dream big.
I always dream big, man. Otherwise, what the fuck are you doing? You know, you ain't doing shit. You're just content living your normal life. You don't have any other aspirations. Dreaming is important.
Yes, sir.
Yes.
Yes. So, yeah.
Yeah.
So I think we've got to the part, we're talking about the shredded face, right?
Yes.
Which I thought the makeup was incredible.
Yeah.
Again, for an indie film, the makeup was unreal.
There must have been some money put into this thing, man. I wouldn't say like $1 million or anything like that, but I'd say maybe $250,000, maybe $200,000, at least something, because there was like really well done effects, practical effects.
You know what I wanted to check?
What's that?
If Andrew Scott Bell did the score.
Oh, that's a good call. I wouldn't be surprised if he's just got this deal to do all those movies.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know how to check, but
I would assume just go on IMDb and look up, composer. Or we could just text him and be like, hey, did you do the score for this? No? Oh, okay, thanks.
Yeah, I'll just do that.
Yeah, just send him a quick text. I mean, probably be able to find it a little faster. He'd respond.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I actually wasn't even really focusing that much on the score because there was so much insanity happening. Peter Pan went on basically a warpath. He was just going all over the place, killing a shit ton of people. Now, like, he would kill parents and take the kids, or he'd just slaughter a whole entire family. And I was just like, okay, I guess like nothing's off topic or nothing is impossible when it comes to Peter Pan. He just takes whoever he wants and just kills the other people. Now, I don't know if you noticed this. At the very beginning where Peter Pan was a clown, didn't that remind you of Circus of the Dead?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, a little bit for sure.
Absolutely. Where he's standing there, he's talking to the crowd or pandering to the crowd, and then he points to a kid and hands him a balloon dog. Naturally, that same kid later is hunted down and kidnapped. Almost the same deal as Circus of the Dead, except with Circus of the Dead, it was the husband that was hunted down. Papa Corn went to the house, killed everyone there, took the husband. So a little different, but very similar at the same time. So I thought that was very interesting to kind of like, you know, I'm wondering if it was maybe an influence and that he knows Bloody Bill and this movie. Maybe he used it as an inspiration.
Possibly.
Yeah.
Papa Corin's going to be a classic character.
I think so. He was awesome in Circus of the Dead.
Yeah. And obviously we have the sequel coming out at some point this year.
Yeah. So I will say this. It was a good portion of this movie where I wasn't really taking any notes. I think I was just watching and it was kind of like, okay, nothing's really happening. And then when things started happening, man, I was taking all sorts of fucking crazy notes.
Oh, yeah.
There was so much insanity happening in such a short span of time that when there was those kind of lulls happening, it made up for it.
I kind of agree with you because I noticed the same thing when it got towards the end. I was like, holy shit, I barely took any notes. And that's, we've talked about this before on previous episodes of this podcast, but that's not a bad thing. It just means we were glued to it.
Yes. Yeah, it doesn't mean it's a bad thing at all. There is some instances where it's like, if I'm not taking any notes, I don't give a shit to take notes because I'm like, this movie sucks. We've had those movies before. We had one episode and it didn't record, luckily, because we would not have wanted to release it. We hated it so much. I think that would have been the first 0 out of 5. Good thing my audio fucked up because
I think I might have had a negative number, actually.
Oh, it was bad. Didn't we do like a 10-second review of it on an episode and that was it? It stinks. And that's all it was.
You played that clip from The Critic.
Yep. And it stinks.
That was it. Here's our review of, it was called The Anchor, right?
No.
It was the bunker one.
Yeah, it was the Underground.
Underground, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't like that at all. Here's another review of The Underground. Hard to listen to because everything was fucking echoed. So the audio was trash. The story was trash. Acting was subpar. Everything about it, I did not like. I just couldn't. I couldn't do it.
It was definitely a struggle to watch that movie.
It was also a struggle to record, too.
Yeah, and then we recorded a whole episode about it, or we thought we did.
Yep. Got all sorts of errors.
Whatever, it worked out. We hotshotted something else that worked, and then we still talk about The Anchor or whatever Underground. We still talk about Underground more than any other shitty movie we reviewed.
Yeah, well,
and the Underground episode never even came out.
Yeah, I know. I bet you people want to hear that lost episode. Well, I got news for you, and I'm not going to hear it because we don't have the audio for it. We have Corey's side of the audio, but not my audio. So if you wanted to hear Corey one side talk for 45 minutes, I'll drop it somewhere.
But director's cut when I'm gone.
Director's cut just you the whole time. People will be like, what is this episode? What are they even talking about? It would just be a lot of dead air because I'm usually talking all sorts of shit. And then you're like, yeah, this movie sucks.
I'm just talking to myself the whole time.
Oh, man. Fuck it. I should do it. I don't know if people would be into it. They'd probably lose their friggin' mind hearing all sorts of dead air.
For our 200th episode, I'd give you permission to drop it.
Okay, cool. Or we re-record it for 200.
No, that's not a spot.
Like, fuck that, I'm not doing it.
Yeah, I don't want to watch that movie again.
I don't blame you. I don't remember it, don't want to watch it.
It was about
when you don't want to rewatch a movie, it's pretty bad. It's like, no, I can't be bothered to watch that again.
So back to Peter Pan here.
Yes, back to like an actual good movie. Go for it.
So the scene where Peter Pan was breaking all of Tinkerbell's bones.
Oh my God.
Were you fucking curled up in your couch when that happened? Because I thought you might have been.
A little bit. And then he starts just hacking away at the arms and just gone. Oh my God.
But the brakes were so loud.
Yes, they were very loud. Oh my goodness. So Tinkerbell's on the table, laying on the table, and Peter Pan is pissed because Tinkerbell is trying to help the brother and sister escape. Now, obviously, Peter Pan sees that as going behind his back. So as Tinkerbell is laying on the table, he breaks Tinkerbell's arm in epic fashion, just like her arm is extended. So naturally, if you smash the arm down while it's sticking out from the table, it's going to go the opposite way. And that's exactly what happened here. And then he decides to just start cutting off Tinkerbell's arms.
With a cleaver.
With a cleaver. Now, I want to paint this picture here, is that when you think Tinkerbell, you think the fairy, small, floating around, all that stuff. Not the case here. Tinkerbell looked like, well, the better put it, a heroin addict. And I think that's basically what was happening here.
Yeah, pixie dust.
Yeah, they were claiming it was pixie dust. But really, they were heroin needles, and they had a sticker on them that said pixie dust. So she was shooting up all sorts of heroin. And dude, her arm at the beginning after shooting up.
So gross.
Gross. There was just holes everywhere.
Looked like a bunch of like wormholes in a desert.
Yeah. Oh my God. What a friggin' thing to do, that shit. Because I always wondered, like, when it comes to heroin, you're heating that shit up in a spoon, right? So they pull that shit into a needle. So that's got to be hot going into the veins.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure.
That's fucking crazy. I couldn't imagine just being like, oh, I'm just going to inject this fucking boiling liquid into my veins. Nuts.
Hey, desperate times.
Desperate times call for desperate measures. And she was doing all sorts of heroin in this. And he was just passing it off as pixie dust. This is where I'm thinking, like, okay, maybe he's has nothing to do with Neverland. Neverland isn't a thing. This is all inside his head. And what he does is, like, he has this person there. He calls her Tinkerbell and just gets her all sorts of drugged up. And he's crazy. He's a serial killer who kills children and anyone really in his path. So I don't think he was really Peter Pan. I just think he was a psychopath. And you could be the judge for that. If you look at him, he does look crazy. And then you'll probably question what he does. Because to get these kids to Neverland, he strangles them to death.
Yep. Oh, so terrible.
Yeah, it's so bad. Now, one could debate that he strangles these kids to death and their souls go to Neverland, which would make sense because if you're a dead human being, your soul is pretty much stuck at one age. Going to Neverland doesn't even matter. You know, that's just like, oh, okay, I died and this is how I look for the rest of my life. I'm a child for the rest of my life, but I'm also a dead child and a soul that's floating around. So maybe that's his idea of Neverland is killing people and their soul goes to a different place where they will never age. But we don't know. There was like some things that weren't really explained there. I don't know if maybe given out the idea that maybe he's just a psychopath, he's not actually Peter Pan, would ruin the story. I mean, what do you think? Would that ruin the story if it was really just a guy who was thinking he was Peter Pan, but he wasn't actually Peter Pan?
Yeah, but these are all movies based on, they were cartoons. They were, you know, take place in fantasy land, fantasy worlds kind of thing.
Right, yeah.
So I wouldn't be shocked if Scott Chambers kind of maybe has that in as a twist for one of the films in the universe where Peter Pan is just a regular dude.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's super creative that way. But if it ends up being he really is Peter Pan, Neverland is a real place that we see in the second movie. Mm-hmm. Similar to what we did in the Winnie the Pooh movies, 100 Acre Wood.
Okay.
Was the place where Pooh lived and his friends lived in the woods in the cartoons.
Right. Okay. So I got to talk about this because this is completely absurd. When Peter Pan takes his pants off.
It was like Ken doll.
Straight Ken doll action. Unless it like fucking went inside itself. And it's like
he had an innie.
Yeah, he had an innie for a penis. Just no, I don't need to show myself. I'm just gonna like what's a fucking crustacean that just kind of climbs into its shell?
A snail?
Yeah, we'll go snail. Alright, it's just a fucking snail. It's like, nope, I'm good. I'm gonna suck myself back into my own body.
Camera shy. And,
yep. His Peter Pan penis was very much camera shy. Fucking A, man. Here's the thing, though. What was the point of that?
Didn't do anything for the story.
It didn't. It was kind of a throwaway thing. I mean, if anything, Peter Pan's a boy, right? Or a man at this point.
It's a man.
The male. Okay, so Peter Pan is a male human being. who went to Neverland and forever remained a boy. Now, I can say this, is that when you're born a male, regardless of how old you are, you have a penis. So I don't know what happened with Peter Pan to straight up turn into a Ken doll. I was like, okay, so just nothing going on down there.
The sequel.
We'll find out. Maybe he's castrated.
Maybe
they don't want him to grow. Or, you know what? Maybe he's got like these crazy parents who didn't want him to grow as a child. So they fucking cut it off and expected him to stay the same age, be a child forever. I don't know. It's possible. Maybe we'll find that out in the sequel, because it's clear there's going to be a sequel to this. And I don't know if the same people are going to be involved. I wouldn't be surprised if the same end girl and the brother will be there. Who knows? Only time will tell. I'm excited for it, though, because I would love to see the sequel for this movie. This movie, again, great.
And yeah, but we never really talked about the reveal that Peter Pan was keeping Captain Hook captive in his basement.
See, I was wondering about that. Was that Captain Hook? Like, really Captain Hook?
It had to be who it was supposed to be. Well, Hook.
Hook. Obviously, the hand cut off. Hook jammed in the hand. So we're all assuming Captain Hook. Now,
there's no reason it's not. I mean, that was his nemesis in the original cartoon.
Yes. But here's the thing. So Wendy's downstairs, and she pulls up that photo of the kid that got kidnapped in the beginning of the film.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm thinking, is that kid Captain Hook?
Was it a young version of it?
Yeah. So he got kidnapped, brought to Neverland, or really just kidnapped, and he grows up, and his hand gets cut off, a hook's put in place for some weird reason, and maybe he turns into Captain Hook. But
yeah, maybe.
I don't know. We'll find out in the sequel, but we have a nice little cameo at the end by Captain Hook. Not like your ridiculous Captain Hook that you used to see in the movie Hook or like in the cartoon itself. This is like a really decrepit human being who looks like they're just starved and just dirty and fucking gross. And right before Hook takes Peter Pan away, Michael is smashing Peter Pan's face into oblivion.
Oh, yeah, he is.
Oh, my God.
And I thought it was going to be way worse than it was when he took his mask off.
I thought the same thing. I thought we were going to be expecting refried beans.
Shredded hamburger meat.
Oh, just shredded hamburger, just like absolute mush, because he was going nuts and blood was spraying everywhere all over this kid. So he takes off the mask and yeah, his face is very much still intact. I don't know if the mask helped to prevent so much damage, but I did think that was a little weird. However, that's when we see Hook come up from behind, jam the hook into his shoulder and starts pulling him away. So we don't see an actual death. We just see him get pulled away, and that's it.
Fade to black.
Well, not quite. So at the end of the movie, we think we get like one of those happy endings where it's like, okay, I'm seeing it from a mile away. I'm like, there's no way this is going to be a straight happy ending like this, because it doesn't happen in horror movies. All right. So she's standing there with her, like they're celebrating her brother's birthday. By the way, she got her fingers cut off by Peter Pan. So she's rocking this like black looking glove with prosthetic fingers,
yeah,
which kind of cool. So they're celebrating his birthday. They get a phone call, and it's the music that was played earlier on an initial phone call to the family of Michael, who was kidnapped by Peter Pan. Same music was playing over the phone. And this is where we're like, okay, there's going to be a sequel. Shit's not done yet. There's going to be way more chaos, I bet. But I will say this, man, this movie was great. Corey, I think we can just get into it. We don't want to give away too much anyways.
Wait, so, no, one last thing.
One last thing? Okay. Yeah.
So when that phone call that Wendy gets, I can't be the only one that thought that I was going to hear, "Hello, Wendy."
Yeah, see, that's what I was thinking that he was going to speak, but no, it was just the music. So either way, it's fine. Hello, Wendy.
All right. So this is going to get a 5 out of 5 if it wasn't obvious. This is everything I hoped it would be. Perfect horror portrayal of one of my favorite Disney characters. And I kind of ranted about this before, but Scott Chambers really has a deep grasp on what this childhood nightmare universe would look like. Mm-hmm. And I hope more people recognize him for it. It doesn't feel like an indie film whatsoever. In fact, it felt like a horror film with a sizable budget. I cannot wait for Pinocchio and Bambi and whatever else Scott is cooking up.
Oh, I absolutely agree. This did not feel like an independent film. You know, it's oftentimes when you think independent films, you think, oh, it's like kind of shot real shitty, the acting's bad, it's garbage stories, it's whatever, right? It's just, oh, we're going to make a slasher film, and here's what's going to happen. And for the most part, they're usually fine. This one, Scott Chambers knocked it out of the park. Same thing, I'm going to go with a 5 out of 5 on this as well. The main redeeming factor of this movie is Martin Portlock and his take on Peter Pan. He was absolutely unreal in this. And talk about taking what could potentially be something absolutely fucking stupid and elevating it to a level we wouldn't have expected. The gore was great, including the practical effects. I love the practical effects in this movie. It's just, it was top notch. And I didn't see a lot of like visual effects stuff, which is important. I feel like that's a lost art, is practical effects in movies. I had some questions regarding the selection of kids to bring to Neverland, but maybe a second watch will help clarify things I may have missed, or maybe we'll find out specifically why some are selected, why some aren't in the sequel. Cinematography was well done. Felt like a movie, like you were saying, that could definitely hang in theaters, even with the premise of slasher being Peter Pan movie. Obviously, a lot of people will squawk at that, but I would put this movie up against any other movie in theaters right now, for sure.
I was going to say, put this out at the same time as the next, or the sequel out at the same time as the next Smile movie.
Yeah, and let's see what happens. Smile, on paper, will probably do better because it's got a bigger budget when it comes to marketing.
You're right.
But let's say, hypothetically, Smile and Peter Pan Neverland Nightmare 2 have the same exact budget. I bet you anything, Peter Pan Neverland Nightmare 2 could hang with Smile 3.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And it's all about marketing, man. If you have that kind of marketing, I think the sky's the limit. And that's why Terrifier 3 was so pivotal, is because they didn't have a marketing budget, really. I mean, they did some basic stuff, but it was mostly word of mouth. Now, if Peter Pan Neverland Nightmare had the same kind of word of mouth, I mean, it would have knocked it out of the park. I think it would have done really well in theaters, but it was only in theaters like 2 days, 3 days. So, as we discussed, it's clearly wide open for a sequel, so I'm looking forward to seeing what happens next. So if you have an opportunity to check out Peter Pan's Neverland Nightmare, we highly recommend it. All right, everyone, be sure to like, follow, and subscribe on Facebook, X, Instagram, TikTok, Threads, and YouTube. Leave us a 5-star review on all podcast platforms so we can get some more exposure. Of course, tell your friends. Both our intro and outro music are courtesy of Andrew Scott Bell. Be sure to check out Andrew on all major streaming platforms. And if you see Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey on vinyl in the wild, be sure to pick it up. We're also part of the Shining Wizards Network. Be sure to visit ShiningWizardsNetwork.com. They're an awesome podcast network ranging from wrestling to heavy metal, horror, all that good stuff. So check that out. Visit 30ScreamsOrLess.com for all previous episodes and transcripts to go with those episodes. Also, check out BeardOctane.com for their whole line of grooming supplies, and be sure to use the code 30Screams10 at checkout for 10% off your order. And if there's anything you want us to review, send an email to 30ScreamsOrLess@gmail.com or hit us up on social media. Use hashtag 30ScreamsOrLess. And also, we have some awesome merch for sale on our website, so definitely check that out. If you go to our website, at the very top, there's a shop link. Click that link, and you'll see all sorts of shirts, hats, mugs, things like that. If you buy it, it helps going towards our hosting costs. I'm Steve.
I'm Corey.
And thanks for listening to 30 Screams or Less. And don't forget to drink your beans.